From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. If public acceptance of mental health challenges and corresponding treatment is finally reaching a level close to universal, the same cannot be said for members of the military. Hiding mental health impacts, especially something as devastating as PTSD, is still pretty standard. However, there are major efforts to thwart this problem, and today on the show, you'll hear about both ways to bring this problem out in the open and new therapies that are helping soldiers get their lives back. You'll hear from the Wounded Warrior Project and learn about new treatments that are decades in the making. Then we'll finish out the show with two local stories, one about how a local business is suffering by proximity to the Coffin Butte landfill, and another update on the Oregon Ready Project. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Soldiers need to be tough and resilient, but at times this toughness can create situations where they feel that asking for help would blunt that toughness. Today on the show, you'll hear from the Wounded Warrior Project about new mental health treatments for returning vets and a new ethos for care. John Eaton, the Wounded Warrior Project's Vice President of Complex Care. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Michael, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Why don't you remind folks, I know a lot of people know, but just remind folks what is Wounded Warrior Project, what does it do?
Yes, Wounded Warrior Project, we got our start in 2003 as a grassroots initiative where a group of local citizens were packing backpacks with care and comfort items and delivering them to the bedside of our nation's first returning wounded and injured service members from Iraq and Afghanistan. And while the backpack was important, it was much more than the backpack. It was really a promise that we made that day to always be there no matter what. Fast forward today, over 20 years later, we're still keeping that promise each day to over 270,000 registered alumni, both service members, veterans, and we do that through a wide range of over 18 different programs and services that are all free of cost to those who've served.
Okay. And then maybe you can help us define and explain what PTSD is and what it does to veterans who suffer with it.
Yeah, so we know that from the incidence perspective, so each year we speak with our warriors and what we're hearing is that, you know, 4 out of 5 warriors are living with symptoms of PTSD each and every day. And 50% of our warriors are actually living with 2 or more mental health conditions. And these are things that are impacting their daily lives. And so whether it's their inability to connect with their family, what inability to really have peace and purpose. And so our programs are really addressed because of this need. We see the need as being really urgent and timely when we look at the data today.
Okay. Maybe even talk about how PTSD used to be treated. I know there's, and we'll talk about some of the newer treatments, but, you know, specifically around, I wonder if there's a concern around the fact that, you know, in our ethos and whatnot, it might be, oh, just get over it versus what we're doing now. Maybe talk about how far we've come.
Yeah, and that's a great point. When you look at traditional treatment for PTSD, we hear a lot from our warriors that one, care can also oftentimes be inaccessible. We know that traditional care really falls in one of two buckets. One is weekly talk therapy with the dose of a full dose of care being up to a year of weekly therapy. And then the other end of the spectrum, we have residential programs where warriors are living on site, having this intensive treatment anywhere up to 3 months. And what the data shows is that on average, less than 60% of warriors ever complete the full dose of those programs. And further, we know that if warriors are experiencing more than one mental health condition, they wouldn't be eligible for those programs. And so this really, you think about the traditional care, was inspiration for Wounded Warrior Project. And just over 10 years ago, launched a first of its kind partnership with 4 academic medical centers called Warrior Care Network, with the goal of transforming the way that PTSD is cared for. And so those traditional programs now today, we have served over 8,000 warriors with accelerated brain health programming. So this is that year's worth of therapy compressed in just 2 weeks.
Wow. Give us an example of what that might look like.
Yeah, so warriors can call into Wounded Warrior Project and speak directly with our triage team. And through that conversation, we'll learn more about their unique needs and how they're looking to really go about with their mental health journey. And based on what their needs are, we'll connect them with the most appropriate Warrior Care Network site. They'll actually have that care in person with a cohort of up to 18 other veterans and different cohorts specific to what the needs are. So whether warriors are living with PTSD or it's substance use, perhaps military sexual trauma, and even traumatic brain injury, these are all subspecialties where care is really innovated and incorporated based on the warrior's needs.
Okay. Are there some really, really kind of cutting edge and new therapies that you'd like to talk about? And I've heard things as simple as talking to someone, but also I've heard other types of medicines and therapies might be really groundbreaking. Talk about some of those.
Yeah, and I think we're on the precipice of, it's been over 20 years since we've seen a new treatment approved for post-traumatic stress. And, we're seeing now several that will transform the way care is delivered over the next 2 years. And the way Wounded Warrior Project looked at this is really under this model of precision mental health care. And so tailoring that care unique to the warrior's both demographics, whether it's their symptomology, and really honing in precisely on what care will be most effective. So today, we're seeing that our accelerator programming is producing a positive effect of treatment 75% of the time. And through our approach with advanced therapies and innovation, we're going to close the gap on that remaining 25%. And so advanced treatments like stellate ganglion blocks and RTMS are all areas where Wounded Warrior Project is investing in research to better understand how we can use those tools to ultimately cure PTSD. That is our 30-year goal. We believe it's within reach. Of those therapies, those that are most promising, what we're starting to see is the promise around psychedelic-assisted treatment.
Hmm. That would be like psychedelics like magic mushrooms or those sorts of things?
So today we're funding research with our partners around MDMA as well as psilocybin. And importantly, looking at how those medications can actually help increase the effectiveness of our evidence-based programming.
Oh, that's fascinating. If you're just joining us, we're talking with John Eaton. He is the Wounded Warrior Project's Vice President of Complex Care. Talk about both for the warriors themselves, the soldiers you've been talking about, but also society in general. Talk about removing the stigma of needing mental health care.
Yeah, that is, when you talk about barriers to care, oftentimes we think about financial or access and capacity, but stigma continues to be one of the largest barriers to care. And what we're seeing, from a civilian perspective across the United States, there's a difference of up to 13 years from when an individual has their first mental health symptom to when they have their first clinical intervention on average. And so when you think about stigma, and oftentimes warriors can talk about, my wounds aren't physical, so they're not as important. But we really put an emphasis on prioritizing the invisible wounds of war and really creating conversations, opening communities and connection to get warriors to really feel in a position to have those needs supported.
Okay. I've never served, but I could imagine that, especially as somebody enters the service, there has to be a lot of conversation around the difficulties of it and the challenges and the toughness needed to be a soldier. Is there a way in which, as part of training, and perhaps it's already happening, but in terms of basic training or when someone enters the military, that those conversations can happen there as well about the fact that you're about to enter something very difficult and it may tax you mentally? You need to understand that help is available.
Yes, and that's a really great point. And when you think about the benefits of resiliency and looking, what we're seeing is the impact of military service oftentimes. And so we've had, not just clinical programs, but it's important to note that there's a wide range of programs within WWP specifically that really are addressing mental wellness. And so one that I would just share with this is to look at how we're serving an active duty population. And so we have a program called Project Odyssey that is a 9-week program, but it's kicked off with a 1-week experiential learning symposium where warriors are being put out of their comfort zone into their stretch zone, and they're growing both in resilience and psychological wellness. And what's been really awesome to see is a partnership with Army and Army chaplains. And so we're serving active duty service members alongside Army chaplains in this program. And then they're going back to their units with new connections, with new resources. We're seeing it really positive, both pre and post service.
Okay. What are you most optimistic about with regard to what you're doing at Wounded Warrior Project, but also, you know, like some of the things we talked about, removing stigma, but also these new treatments?
I am most optimistic and enthusiastic about the promise around precision mental health care. When you think about the impact of precision medicine on something like cancer care over the last 20, 30 years, what could have been a terminal illness is now being managed like chronic disease, and down to the genetic level with early identification, prevention, intervention. We see the same being true for mental health. And our approach with Warrior Care Network and this precision mental health approach is really helping to drive the needle closer. And so what we're seeing is warriors don't have to suffer in silence. They're able to be connected with personalized care, and we're seeing it change lives.
Okay. John, my last question for you is this. You know, if somebody listening right now is suffering from PTSD themselves or knows someone who is, what are things they can do right now to seek help?
What we know is that all of our programs at the end of the day are about connection. We know that connection saves lives and connection can be healing. And so I would encourage, whether you're a veteran, you're an active duty service member, or you know someone who's serving, reach out to Wounded Warrior Project. So woundedwarriorproject.org to learn more, to register, and to be connected with our life-saving, life-changing programs. You may not need them now, but we want you to know we're here for you into the future. And also there might be a way for you to serve others. And so we'd really recommend folks reach out and see how they can be a part of our mission.
He's John Eaton, Wounded Warrior Project's Vice President of Complex Care. John, really appreciate your conversation and talking with us. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Michael.
Now let's check in with members of our team about important stories they're covering. We first chat with Macy Moore about impacts from Coffin Butte. KLCC's Macy Moore. Macy, always good to talk with you. Thanks so much for coming down and chatting.
Yeah, of course.
I enjoyed your story. It's a difficult story because it's wrapped up in something we've been covering for a long time, Coffin Butte. But tell our audience about bit-by-bit adaptive writing. First of all, what is it?
So Bit by Bit is basically a therapy horse ranch. Mm-hmm. So they work with people with disabilities or foster kids or adults going through difficult circumstances and have them come out to their little ranch that's just north of Corvallis. Okay. And you can come hang out. They have like specially trained therapy horses that you can ride and work with. And it's been a nonprofit for about a decade, I believe, in Corvallis.
Okay. So you went out there and you weren't necessarily covering what they do. You were covering what's happening to them. Talk about what is happening to them being so close to the landfill that is Coffin Butte.
Yeah, so I went out to Bit by Bit and was sort of taken around the property. And Coffin Butte, we've been talking about a lot because of the expansion plans that are technically not moving on. There's a repeal and a whole thing, you know, going on with Coffin Butte. But this is interesting because this was a different problem where they're not struggling with the idea of Coffin Butte expanding, because Bit by Bit is next to Coffin Butte on two of four sides. It's bordered by Coffin Butte's land border. And they're not struggling with the expansion. They're struggling with like a struggle with management where they have trash flying over the barrier tree line that's between the landfill and the other properties in the area. And they're will do like blasting expansion stuff, and it'll freak the horses out, and they won't tell them when they're going to be doing blasting. And there's just been some difficult communication, they've said, and they will say, hey, we're having trash like fly over the barrier, we can't have that, horses can't, they die if they eat trash. Is the frankest way to say it. So we can't have let our animals graze and like do the normal animal stuff they're going to do. So they've just been having a really hard time with Coffin Butte not improving the situation. Yeah. At least that's how they see it.
Sure. I guess I'm wondering too, when you talk to them, has this been a building problem, or has it always been this way?
It's been a recent management problem. They said the last 5 years have been very difficult living next to Coffin Butte, but the nonprofit's been there for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And before that, they said the management was not a problem. They were very communicative. They were very good about coming out if someone reported trash. And now, like, they'll have workers from Republic Services come out when they do reports, but just nothing will change.
Okay. Just, you already did this, but talk about, just so people have a level set about Coffin Butte, you know, talk about the fact that I know in your reporting you talked about trash is one thing, but air quality has been a big issue there too.
Yes, Coffin Butte's had a big air quality problem. They just received a fine from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. It was the biggest fine in the department's history thus far, of over $3 million for mostly air quality violations.
Yeah, and I know we've been reporting on it, and you know, the county isn't moving forward with the expansion, but it still remains there, right? It's not going anywhere, correct?
It's not going anywhere, at least not in the immediate future. Mm-hmm. I know there have been talks about getting rid of the landfill eventually, but that's obviously a huge job. The landfill's been there for a really long time. That's, I don't even know how you go into doing something like that. So that, but lots of people who kind of live in that, like, Adair Village area right outside of Corvallis complain a lot about Coffin Butte, complain about smelling the landfill, complain about trash. There have been other businesses that feel like they've been affected in the area.
Yeah, yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking to our reporter, Macy Moore, about the impacts of Coffin Butte on a local business. That local business, Bit by Bit, what are they having to do? I mean, can they operate? Do they have to keep their horses in the barn? What kind of, how are they living with this?
So they haven't operated on their, like, little ranch property since October of 2025. And they've had to move the horses to, like, a secondary location where they can live not near the landfill and the poor air quality and be able to, like, go out and graze and do normal horse stuff, basically. Mm-hmm. And then they also have cows and goats on the property that have had to stay because they can't find somewhere else to put them and house them right now.
Okay, okay. What has Republic said about all this? Have we gotten any statements from them?
Yeah, they have said that they do their best to maintain trash and listen to air quality complaints, and that they are always willing to listen to people around them to hear what they're saying and come out and see if there's trash. But that's pretty much the most I got from asking Republic Services.
Okay.
And they are trying to combat the fine currently.
Okay, okay, okay. Is there any recourse for Bit by Bit? I mean, ultimately, because they know the landfill is not going to go anywhere. What do they ultimately want to have happen?
They really want their property to get bought out so they can move. They want it bought out by Republic Services because it's very hard to be selling property close to Coffin Butte right now because of landfill management.
Yeah.
So that's, like, the dream scenario, but they have reached out to Republic Services about that and, like, named their price, and Republic Services just said no.
What is Corvallis? What's the vibe about Coffin Butte in Corvallis?
Definitely over the last couple of years, people have been very frustrated with Coffin Butte, did not want it to expand. But the thing that was interesting about this story and really piqued my interest with it was that a lot of people think that because the commissioners said that Coffin Butte's not going to expand anymore, that the problems with it are over. Hmm. I think a lot of people in Corvallis are not as focused on Coffin Butte as they once were because of that decision about the expansion earlier this year. But this problem was interesting because it's not going to be fixed by the lack of expansion. There needs to be, like, a management change.
Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Macy Moore, reporter for us here at KLCC. Macy, thanks so much for coming in and chatting.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, as part of our regular check-in on the Oregon Ready series, we talk with Morning Edition host Love Cross. KLCC's Morning Edition host and expert in emergency preparedness, Love Cross, joins us. Love, it's great to see you.
I am slowly getting there, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, what isn't slow is heat. We've all experienced this heat wave. Summer's basically here, and we're entering wildfire season. And as you found out, it's not always just about what burns in the flames, right?
That's so right. More often for many of us, it's actually smoke. Weeks of unhealthy air have really become a regular part of summer, and health officials say it's something we can't ignore anymore.
And that's one of those things people talk about, how the climate has changed, how the environment has changed. That's changed, right?
Absolutely, and pretty significantly. Public health experts say the number of bad air quality days has increased a lot over just the past 15 years. That's really taking a toll on people's lung health, especially for kids, seniors, and anyone with asthma or other respiratory issues.
Yeah, we always hear about how it impacts vulnerable populations. So, okay, what do people do on a day-to-day basis to combat this?
Well, a big one is just getting in the habit of checking the air quality index, the AQI, like you'd check the weather. I often announce those levels, you know, during Morning Edition. There are a variety of places you can get that info, and I discuss those in my most recent piece.
Yeah, and we're going to link to that. So people here love Cross telling them that the AQI is high. So if it is, what then?
Well, if those numbers are high, maybe you skip that outdoor run or move activities inside. And if you do need to be outside, wearing an N95 mask can make a big difference. It can filter out about 95% of those particles.
Yes, so many of us have those lying around from COVID. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, it's great to stay inside when the AQI is high. Well, let's talk about the home. What can people do there with their air quality?
Well, when the skies are smoky, the goal is cleaner air indoors. So, of course, air purifiers help. You can also make a DIY filter with a box fan and HEPA filter, a little less expensive than those air purifiers. And honestly, it's worth doing ahead of time because those supplies sell out fast once smoke hits.
Yeah, and you tried that, right?
You know, I did. Back after the Holiday Farm fire, the filter turned black in just a couple of days. You can actually see a photo of that dirty filter as part of our Oregon Ready series at klcc.org. It just really drives home how much stuff is in the air and what your lungs would be dealing with otherwise.
Okay. And then obviously with fire comes ash. What happens when that starts falling and settling in?
It's definitely another concern, and it's not just messy. It can carry harmful particles. So again, masks help there. And when you clean it up, you want to be gentle, light sweeping, no leaf blowers, because you don't want to kick those particles back up into the air because then you'll breathe them in.
Yeah, it's a great tip. And of course, you know, as you've been reporting on, it all comes down to preparation, doesn't it?
It sure does. And having those masks on hand, knowing how to check the AQI, having an air purifier or the supplies to make one, maybe setting up a clean air room in your home, tips on that are at our website as well. Those small steps can make a big difference.
Okay, okay. And we're going to keep this series going, right?
Yeah, that's right. Next week, we'll be looking at ways to have defensible space for the outside of your home as part of broader disaster preparedness.
Great. Okay, love. Thanks so much. And we're going to keep following along. And as a reminder, you can find the full Oregon Ready series at klcc.org/OregonReady. As always, thank you so much, love.
Thank you, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, the state climatologist will join us to talk about El Nino and what we might be expecting for our weather in the near and medium term future. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.